Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we're back for episode 8 of Digital Divination. Wow, I can't believe we're already up to 8.
I know, it's been so much fun.
Yeah, it's like it seems like we just started, and now we're we do these every other week. So, this is like this means we're like 4 months in.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot of blathering, really, that we've done.
Yes, and we still have more to do. All right, so Ron, you are heading out like tomorrow.
Yes, in fact, we are. It's so we'd been planning on getting a camper that tows behind our SUV. We've been looking at getting one of those for a while, thinking it was always maybe next spring, maybe the spring after. But with the coronavirus keeping everything locked down, I think that a lot of people are really reconsidering the very way you vacation. And so, all right, well, if we're going to be vacationing with just my family and not with other people, we don't want to be going to a resort or a theme park or something. We want to be able to be out of our house and having fun someplace else with ourselves. And so a camper seemed like a really good way to get that. And so we sort of expedited the process. So we've got one of those pop-up campers with the hard sides that folds up into kind of an A-frame. And it's, we're really looking forward to it. We just got it just a few days ago and we're taking off tomorrow. My wife's got a cousin that is getting married in Colorado, a socially distant wedding that's in a park and everybody's going to be apart from each other. I assume the, officiant is going to have to talk really loud. but at any rate, we're actually really taking our time to get there. We're going to drive from the Seattle area here down to Colorado and then back again. And we're going to take just over a week to do it. So, staying in little state parks and campgrounds and things like that along the way. Not all of them are going to have hookups. Our families, we've done a lot of tent camping. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty self-sufficient. It'll be a little bit like a little more glamorous for us to actually have an electricity and water hookup. But
well, let me tell you, I mentioned this to you when we talked earlier. I've had a couple of campers. One of the things I'm really good at, which you might be interested in, is actually hooking up solar on campers.
Ooh, we've got a hookup for solar. We just don't have any of the solar. So
yes. So we should talk more about that as well. Because there's a couple really neat, inexpensive, relatively inexpensive ways that you can get enough power to power everything you have off grid.
Oh, that'd be kind of nice. We wouldn't have to be stopping any place and that had hookups necessarily. I suppose we might want water, but like I say, we can always work around that with the experienced tent camping we have. It'll make my kids happier to know that they can have light and water. Although we've already learn to kind of focus in on the things the kids like. We have stocked up with an inordinate amount of bacon because getting up and cooking bacon is exactly the camping feel that they have. And they're going to remember, when they're much older, they're going to be like, oh, we went camping with mom and dad a lot. And there was always bacon. That was always the camping thing. And anyway, it's so we're looking forward to it. I'm going to be gone for, I think I want to say eight or maybe 9 days. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm a little nervous because I've never hauled a trailer that big for that long before. So I am by nature a not very cautious driver, and so I have to be a much more cautious driver than usual.
What's the weight on the trailer?
It's about 1,600 pounds, I want to say.
Oh, you won't even notice that,
but I do, it's so much for sharp braking and tight turns and so on. Yeah. But,
1,600 is that's a good weight. It really shouldn't affect you too much.
Yeah, I was really surprised just getting it home from the dealership where we bought it, how responsive it was. We have, mm-hmm. you know, they sell the brake system in with that too. So it stops itself when I'm putting on the pedal to stop the car.
Right.
So I didn't feel like I was having it tug behind me or kind of mm-hmm. shove me when I'm trying to brake, and it moved fairly smoothly. So I don't anticipate a lot of problems. I've just, you know, never having done it before. After this trip, I will be an old hand and ready to take it anywhere. But
well, I tell you what, we've used those type before. So when I was in the service, the morale MWR is what they call it, Morale Welfare and Recreation Office, would have those pop up campers that you could check out really cheap. And I one of the things I'll tell you is I have a hard time backing mm-hmm. up trailers. And the nice thing about those ones is they're so light, you know, I would just unhook it and move it by hand where I wanted it.
I already learned that when we tried to yes. back it in. We've got a you know, wide gate that opens up into our backyard, which is where we've sort of put it out of the way until we leave tomorrow. And I tried to back it in and just couldn't figure out the angle of it until eventually I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to get it kind of as close as I can and see if we can push it. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to push it, I'm like, oh, why didn't I do this all along?
Right.
It's kind of light.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you get something that's 5,000-6,000 pounds, you just want to do that. That one you can do. You know, I mentioned I had some stuff mm-hmm. for campers. I actually have a really cool set of levelers. I just remembered that you can have as well.
Oh, that's great. I'd really appreciate that. We've got wheel chocks. That's about it. So there's...
Yeah, the levelers I have actually double as wheel chocks, but you can go up to there's like a little slope ramp that curls up. You go up to it until it's level one or two, and there's an opposite chock that comes in to set it at that height. It's a really, really cool way.
Oh, that's so to nice. Level up.
And I used it because I had a truck camper, mm-hmm. and so it's used to more weight. So for yours, it'd be really easy.
Yeah, I can just pick it up. I can lift it up and set it on top of the levelers.
Well, yeah, just push it back. Because that's one thing, you know, I don't like sleeping at a weird angle if I can help it.
Okay.
Yeah, so the leveling seems to help. And I think you probably have a couple levelers on it as well, though.
Yeah, there are the way the you back. Brace it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were quick to point out in the orientation I did, which was super valuable. I'm really glad they did that. That those are primarily stabilizers, not levelers.
Right.
You can use it maybe just, you know, parts of a degree, you know, degree or two to change it. But you don't want to be, you know, certainly don't want to be in a situation where most of the weight of the camper and the people inside it are all pushing down on one of those legs.
Right. For sure.
But yeah, I don't particularly mind sleeping at a weird angle. Like I say, we've put up our tents in some pretty angled places. So,
yeah. But the reason why you get a camper is because it's luxury camping now. Instead of
glamping. Yeah. It's glamorous camping. We're going to be glamping.
Well, it's when I got older and I didn't want to sleep on the ground anymore. That was,
I'm not there yet, but my wife has been there for about 3 years.
Yes. Well, I think I'm a good 10 years older than you. So that might make sense then. All right. So, you know, last time, one of the questions we didn't get to was from Jana B., who asked about the upcoming Starfinder playtests for the Nanosite and Mech options that were going to be available. That's actually supposed to happen in July, so like right now.
Right.
Do you have any insights for us on this?
Well, no, I can't say... Or let me back up and say, both I shouldn't say, and when it comes to mechs, I literally can't say. I did actually nose around a little bit in the Nanosite class and sort of see how that works. I'm very interested in sort of the way a new class gets built from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if I'm poking around in the playtest files, maybe I'll take a look to see what they do with mechs. But there was nothing there for me to take a look at. So that has been... It's either in some different file folder or being handled offline in some way. I literally couldn't spoil even if I wanted to.
Well, I wasn't asking to spoil. It's like supposed to come out like end of the month. So
That's true.
It's a preview, you know?
That's right. Well, one thing I will say, and this is a for the armory book. I did the spread, or several pages actually, on the new powered armor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the new, and that really kind of pushes on the limits of what a mech is now in the system. Some of those are actually kind of big, they're gargantuan in size. But one of the things that I wanted to do that I turned over was, I think at the very high, I think it was a level 20 powered armor that would, you could transform into a tiny starship with it.
You so made a transformer.
I did make a transformer. Well, when you ride, right, where yeah. now it's this big walking, hulking armored thing.
Right.
But you push the button and it flips around and now you're in a tiny starfighter with, frankly, really high stats because it's a level 20 tiny
right.
starfighter. But the feedback that I got from that, from Rob McCreary at the time, was this is the kind of space that we probably will want to explore much later when we do mechs. And that was the first time I'd heard any internal confirmation that they were actually going to do mechs. I'm like, oh, people are going to love mechs. Let's why don't you hurry that along? And I know everybody has been, you know, from the fan community has been, where are our mechs? We expect that in our science fiction. So it's nice to see that that's coming. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really curious to see how both of those options kind of play out. Well, can you tell us a little bit about how playtests work at Paizo then?
Oh, sure. This is a, it's something that we do pretty regularly. And one of the things that it took us probably longer than it needed to was to realize that functionally a playtest is about crushing egos, right? Let me tell you, that's what that's for. Because you can put together what you think is absolutely the most balanced, best design, fun to play class. And then you get out there where people are actually interfacing with it and you realize, oh, it's actually kind of awful, right? The things, either people just don't get it, or it's unbalanced in all these ways I hadn't thought about, or there's just something with it that when interfacing with this other part of the rules that you hadn't considered just doesn't work. So it's really, there's an awful lot of the playtest process. I think, let me back up a step and say, I think that there are some people who feel like the playtest process is just Paizo putting the rules out there to see what sort of color of paint to slap on it and call it done. It's a lot deeper than that. There are a lot of concepts that come out in a playtest that you will then never see because we've either realized this isn't the place for them or they don't work in any way that, you know, fits with what it is we're trying to playtest. Or somebody that thought this was the one awesome thing when they designed it, realize it is absolutely not the awesome thing. Or people want something that's either broader or narrower or what have you. And taking that playtest feedback into account is something that we frankly never have enough time to do because there's always more valuable insights and feedback that you can get. Our playtests always feel very rushed to us.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember the second edition playtest had a whole series of adventures that came out. It was in one book, but it was like six different adventures intended to test different components of the game at different levels of play. And we got through maybe, I don't know, five of the seven adventures or something like that before we realized we just kind of weren't enjoying it. And then when I sort of started to press on that a little bit, I'm like, well, we're not really liking the playtest. Some of the feedback was, well, playtest isn't really about being fun, right? You're testing something. Play right, is the first word right. in playtest, but test is the second word. And that means doing iterative things that you may not enjoy or trying to see the same piece that you might otherwise see it once and skip past it over and over and over again. So it's, we take it very seriously. We consider it to be a lot of work, but a lot of important work. I will say it's rare for us to have people willingly come to us and share things like demographic information. So it's a very useful component for us to say, you'll see at the beginning of a lot of our playtests, you know, which age group are you in? What, you know, what's your frequency of play? And things like that are very valuable information. It's very valuable data that we get as part of the playtest that we otherwise don't have a really good way to get. And so the playtest is useful also in that regard.
No, when you mentioned in terms of the iterative thing where, you know, they tell you, here's a very specific build that we want to see you play or the way we want you to play the scenario. It really reminded me of when I was an alpha tester for Guild Wars. Mm-hmm. And basically for both the original Guild Wars and Guild Wars 2, they would bring you in and they would say, okay, everybody come in. We're testing this one thing tonight. So everybody go and just do this one thing. You know, bring this kind of character, do this one thing. And sometimes it was fun, but most of the time it was, you know, testing the mechanic to make sure it could hold up to, you know, having thousands of people doing one thing and didn't break the system, you know. And so when I see the playtest for Pathfinder 2nd Edition, that's the way I viewed it. Now, when Starfinder came out with their playtest of the comm classes, so Biohacker, Vanguard, and
Witchwarper,
you know, I thought that was a little bit different in that basically it was like we're setting these free into the wild, see how you like them, and then give us feedback, and we will adjust before they go final. And like one of the things that the Witchwarper had some really, really powerful stuff, which was a lot of fun, but for the level was, I think, a little bit game-breaking, and so they ended up getting taken out of it, which I think is too bad on one hand, but it's really valuable, you know, to do.
Yeah, that's actually that's actually something that's intentional. I think with the Witchwarper in particular is intentional. It happens a lot where the playtest will include things that we think are bad for the game sometimes. We think this is too powerful, it's bad for the game, but we're going to let people play with it and see in which ways it's bad for the game. So that when we do rein it in, we know we're reining it in a way that creates the best possible play experience.
Right, right, right. And looking, you know, from kind of that experience to this new play test, you know, the nanocytes were basically, you're talking like the you know, the T-1000 be able to change in all kinds of different things and whatnot. And mechs, it seems like it's very possible that there's going to be game-breaking stuff introduced by both of those. And so I think the playtest is actually going to be a lot of fun to do. And then, you know, when they actually come out, it may be toned down quite a bit.
That makes me wonder whether or not there is some variant of Starfinder, some in some alternate universe where everything that proved way too powerful stayed in the game as way too powerful. Yeah. Right? So you're like, of course I'm going to get my Witch Warper and put it in this mech. And then, you know, and now that I say it out loud, that variant does exist. It's called Rifts. And that, of course my juicer is going to get in this Glitter Boy and we're going to, yeah.
So that's kind of it, kind of exciting, you know, looking at the playtest coming for that and seeing how those work out. I'm really curious about mechs in part because I look at the mech system or how they're going to do that, almost akin to starships. You know, it's so fundamentally overpowering relative to an individual character that to have them on the same level trying to do stuff would seem near impossible.
Right. They become the focus of the story when they appear, the same way that starships, as soon as you're interacting with a starship, it becomes the focus of the story. And I don't just mean starship combat. I mean the fact that you can travel so much further, or heck, even if you've got a starship that's right there that in the docking bay that you need to hack its systems to get some information, right? It becomes the real, just its very presence makes it the focus of the scene. I think that mechs are going to work very much in the same way.
So, yeah, I'm really curious, you know, because, you know, if you have one player that's a mech and the rest of the player are, you know, medium-sized creatures and you're trying to investigate something, well, the mech's going to get left back all the time. You know,
right, right.
You know, similar to like, you know, right now, if you have somebody with a big hulking set of power armor, you know, they can't get through the sewers real well.
That's right.
So, you know, they got to find some other. Now, with power armor, you could get like a Mark II null space chamber, put it in there, carry it with you, and yada, yada, yada. Mech's just too big.
Right.
You know, it's like bringing a pocket starship.
I don't know. Unless, and I don't, you know, the, again, I want to point out that I haven't seen anything about the mechs, but if there's there, I can easily picture in a universe with as much magic as Starfinder has some sort of solution to that. Maybe not a pocket mech necessarily, but turning it into some sort of, you know, phantasmal variant, right? That
right. Yeah, no, it'll be a delight to see. And everybody's been clamoring for mechs for a while. So, you know, that they had to give in one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, and I was never much into Battletech. That wasn't a game that I ended up playing a lot of, either in its role-playing iterations or in its computer game iterations. It just wasn't something that was part of my personal science fiction experience. Mm-hmm. But I always certainly knew it was there. And, you know, the movies like Pacific Rim are a lot of fun for having the great big mechs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just watched the second Pacific Rim again. It was on TV, and of course I'm recuperating. So, yeah, I watched it again. And it's like, I didn't realize it gets bad mouthed so much. It was like, wow, this is actually a really fun storyline. So, you know, in Society Play, they actually have kaiju and mechanical kaiju, some mechs that the players interact with, but how they interact with is they go inside them and do stuff.
Yep.
It's not actually a control situation. In fact, it's like there's a whole planet that's designed to, you know, similar to in Pacific Rim, where they have these huge barrier walls, you know, against the kaiju. You know, they have the kind of the same thing versus the colossi that are on the planet. So,
yeah, that's a lot grimmer. That's Daimalco, I want to say.
Right.
And that's a lot grimmer because a big, huge swaths of the planets have kind of been given over to the colossi. And so you've got sort of the desperate people scrabbling. That's the kind of story that I think is very compelling with a mech in it, like Pacific Rim, right? It's like, okay, we need to hold out against these, from a person's perspective, absolutely unstoppable forces. And we're going to embrace some technology that lets us at least have some level of even footing to try to win back even a little bit of the planet we've lost to them. That tells a really compelling story to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, thinking about how this might work, I mean, if it's akin to Starship Battle, then basically everybody would have a mech role, right?
Right.
So you could have, you know, you have small mechs with one individual does all the roles, or a large mech. We have multiple individuals. And then maybe there's some specific limitation because of whatever technology or magical reasons that mechs can only be certain places. And that's where, when you go there, though, you have to use a mech, you know, and so they're all stationed there, some kind of thing.
Yeah, you can see that. I think that mechs are likely to lean more towards the individual units than starships are.
Yeah.
I think that it's not common for a party of five adventurers to go anywhere through space except in one ship together. And I think that mechs might be more common to have, well, here's this mech that has three of us in it. We've got these other slightly smaller mechs with the soldier gets in one and the Solarian gets in the other. And, you know, they're the scrappy little battle ones while everybody else is trying to dominate the battlefield from the big one.
Hmm. Yeah. And so something like that would kind of make sense, you know, to have a new rule set basically just for mechs and how they do things. You know, to have an individual to go against a mech, it's kind of fantastical. But, you know, if you look at, you know, traditional role, you know, D&D or Pathfinder, you know, you have heroes fighting giants all the time, you know, and realistically, it doesn't seem like that should be much of a challenge for the giant.
Right. When you can just step on something.
Yeah. But it turns out it is for some reason. So maybe there is a way, you know, where they'll work that in. That's happening this month. And so I'm excited to see the release.
Yeah. And I wonder, something like a Witchwarper or a Biohacker or even a Nanocyte is fairly easy to say, here's this class, test it out. You can even go play Starfinder Society scenarios with one of these to be able to get some play in and see how it goes. Mechs don't seem that way. So what I wonder is how they're going to frame the testing of mechs in a way that is really has to be dedicated to that, in a way that you don't have to have a dedicated game to test a new class, because you can just kind of throw them into an existing society game.
Yeah, I can't imagine, unless it's like in lieu of the starship, you can choose a mech kind of thing. You know, but then it still brings up issues. Now, the Nanocyte, I think, is a much more kind of realistic thing that could be introduced. Just kind of the multi-adaptive capability of it, you know. It just sounds like it is the jack of all trades, the jack of all skills, the jack of all whatever, because of its ability to adapt. And I would imagine if that's the case, then although it can do all these things, maybe it would not be as strong at any of them individually as a specialist would be.
Ah, sort of. But be able to, that's good design, actually.
Yeah. You know, so give you a trade-off. If you want to be ready for all situations, then the Nanocyte's a great class because it can adapt a lot of different environments, different types of attacks and whatnot. But you're never going to be the ultimate at whatever you're trying to accomplish. There's always going to be somebody who could be better at one thing.
Yeah, I think that the Starfinder team has done a really good job of setting out the existing boundaries of abilities, right? Nobody should be able to fight better than a soldier. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody should be able to outskill the operative. And so on. And so where the new classes that come in play with the space in between.
Right, right. And to see where that what gets filled by them is going to be interesting, because like I didn't even know we needed a Witchwarper.
You thought two casting classes was fine.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, we have the evocation type and we have the divine type. You know, and I thought that's all you need, two types. Now we have this completely new type. I didn't even know we needed that. You know, so I'm curious, is with the Nanocyte, what gap they're trying to fill? Because I don't know what we need now, but I'm sure it's going to be pointed out what was missing once that gets introduced.
Well, with no spoilers, it the Nanocyte is one of those types of classes like Mystic, where you dedicate yourself to fulfilling a specific role within your party and you're given all the tools to do it. Mm-hmm. But you do so by shutting off other abilities, right? You want to be a mystic that is all about, you know, buffing your friends. All right, well, you can build that way, but it means you're not going to have sort of the blasting potential that, you know, a mind breaker might have to be able to control other people and, you know, use all the big boom spells. I mean, that's... So there's some freedom in picking the kind of character you want to make to fill the role that you want. It does close some doors, but in all, it's very broad.
Well, can you at least say this? Is it going to be a fun class to play?
Oh goodness, yes. Yeah, I'm already worrying about the different types of Nanocytes that I would prefer to play.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool. I'm trying to think if there's an AP that we're going to be starting sometime soon in any of my groups, and I don't think there is, because that's one of the fun things is to take one of those from level one through an AP and see how it changes over time.
Yeah, because that's the real sort of performance all the way through. Have you done Attack of the Swarm?
Yes, okay. I have. We could do it again, so... But yeah, I've done that. I'm actually the Threefold Conspiracy is one I'm really interested in.
See, in that one, I've done my best to know as little about as possible because I understand there's a lot of sort of fun twists and tricks if you're a player. Mm-hmm. And so once I heard that, I'm like, all right, well, I haven't written for Threefold Conspiracy, so I haven't read the overall adventure path outline the way that I have for most of the other ones. So Now I want to know very little about it.
Well, I think if you're interested, that would be one we could go to, though. If by the time we finish Dead Sons, when's Devastation Art coming out?
I want to say August or September.
Oh, see, so we're about halfway through book four,
right? Little less than halfway, I think.
Yeah. So once we get through Dawn of Flame, I'm actually going to be keen to get into Devastation Arc.
Okay. I mean, we'd be able to do that with the character we've got. I think that would be really neat.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. And I mean, our group has really, I think, gelled the second AP we've gone through.
Yeah.
So I think that would be fun. Now, that said, I don't think the playtest is going to be going then, but if it is still, we could do playtest characters.
Oh yeah, we could do it.
So we could run an ad site on that.
Yeah, high level playtest characters. That's where
that would be crazy, wouldn't
everything it? Everything really. Yeah, now that I think about it, it's gotta be August, because October is sort of it's Ron month, in that I have a Starfinder AP chapter that is coming out in October and a Pathfinder Adventure Path chapter that is also coming out in October. The fourth of the Agents of Edgewatch Adventure Paths. So if you've got both of the Adventure Paths for both streams are both Ron in October.
Very nice, very nice. You are one busy guy.
Yeah, I love adventures are what I love. So it's no surprise I'm doing plenty of them.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week, Ron. I hope you have a fun trip camping. Yeah. And I hope it's an awesome wedding and that your kids have a blast out there and that maybe you even get a little sleep on the way.
Not on the way, you know, but maybe when I'm there. I'm the driver, so I shouldn't be.
Oh, that's right. Stephanie won't be driving.
Yeah, my wife doesn't drive.
Oh, then never mind about that. Yeah, you're going to be. But it'll be good to chat when you get back.
Absolutely. We'll do this again. This is fun.
All right. I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.